Hello again. This is part two of the Decatur Herald and Review e-edition with Debbie reading this on Wednesday, December 23rd, starting as usual with the obituaries. We start with the Decatur, Beale, Paulette. Prophetess Paulette Beale, 65, went to be with her Savior and Lord on Wednesday, December 16th, 2015, at Decatur Memorial Hospital. Homegoing services will be held 11 a.m. Saturday, December 26, 2015, at the First Church of God in Christ, with visitation 1 hour before service. Burial, Greenwood Cemetery. Walker Funeral Services in charge of the arrangements. Decatur. Clements, Bobby. Bobby Clements, 80, Decatur, died December 7, 2015. No services. Arrangements by Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Decatur again. Hood, David D. David D. Hood, 58, of Arlington Heights, was born December 14, 1957, in Decatur to Hubert and Jewel, nay, Dial, Hood, and passed away suddenly December 20, 2015. Visitation will be Sunday, December 27th, from 3 to 8 p.m. at Lauterberg and Oler Funeral Home, 2000 East Northwest Highway, Arlington Heights. Prayers will be said Monday, December 28th at 9:15 a.m. at the funeral home and proceed to St. James Church, 831 North Arlington Heights Road, Arlington Heights, for funeral mass at 10 a.m. Interment will follow at All Saints Cemetery. For information, go to lauterbergergoler.com. That's Lauterberg and Oler Funeral Home in Arlington Heights. Decatur. Query. Mary Frances. Mary Frances Query, Q-U-E-R-R-E-Y, Query, 79, of Decatur, Illinois, passed away at 5:25 p.m. December 21st, 2015, at Hickory Point Christian Village, Forsyth, Illinois. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, December 26th, at Calvert Funeral Home, Argenta, Illinois, with Pastor Kate Pyle officiating. Burial will follow at Union Cemetery, Oriana, Illinois. Visitation will be from 10 to 11 at the funeral home. Memorials may be directed to the Alzheimer's Association, the American Cancer Society, or the charity of the donor's choice. Macon Jenkins, Farrah Lee. Farrah Lee Jenkins, 76, of Macon, Illinois, passed away at 4:45 p.m. Monday, December 21st, 2015, at St. John's Hospital, Springfield. A service to celebrate Lee's life will be at 11:30 a.m. Saturday, December 26, 2015, at South Macon Township Cemetery, Macon. The family will receive friends for a time of visitation Saturday morning beginning at 10 a.m. until service time at Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home, Macon. Memorials may be made to the Alzheimer's Foundation. Messages of condolences may be sent to the website for Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home in Macon. Oh, Wanako. Metzger, Margaret S. Margaret S. Metzger. Metzger, M-E-T-S-K-E-R, Metzger. 78, of rural Awanico, went to be with her gracious Lord on December 21st, 2015, at 10:38 a.m. in her home, surrounded by her loving family. Visitation is scheduled for Tuesday evening, December 22nd, 2015. So it was held Tuesday evening at McClure Funeral Home. Funeral Mass was this morning at 10 at the St. Louis Catholic Church in Nokomis. McClure Funeral Home, Taylorville, is assisting the family with arrangements. End of that death notice. Mattoon, Cream, Philip Eugene. Philip Eugene, Jean Cream, 85, of Mattoon, passed away at 10:41 a.m. on Monday, December 21st, at Mattoon Healthcare, surrounded by family members. A celebration of life mass will be held at 10 a.m. Monday, December 28th, 2015, at the Immaculate Conception Church on North 21st Street in Mattoon, with Father John Titus officiating. Burial with full military rites will follow at Calvary Cemetery. Visitation for family, friends, and neighbors will be from 4 p.m. until 7 p.m. on Sunday, December 27th, at Schilling Funeral Home on Charleston Avenue in Mattoon. Continuing with the life section, we have judge twice considered for U.S. High Court dies. Philadelphia. Arlen Adams, a longtime stalwart of the federal bench in Philadelphia, was considered at least twice for U.S. Supreme Court, has died. He was 94. He was one of two finalists but lost out to John Paul Stevens. Next article. Another Clinton grandchild on the way. Washington AP. There likely will be one more Clinton on the campaign trail next fall. Chelsea Clinton, the only child of former President Bill Clinton and former Secretary of State Clinton, announced Monday she's expecting her second child next summer. Charlotte's going to be a big sister, feeling very blessed and grateful this holiday season, Chelsea Clinton wrote on Twitter. Chelsea Clinton, 35, and her father have largely stayed off the campaign trail since Hillary Clinton launched her Democratic bid for the presidency in April. Both have said they plan to intensify their public political roles after the new year in an effort to boost Clinton campaign just 6 weeks before the first round of primary voting. The soon-to-be second-time grandparents tweeted out their congratulations Monday. Your dad and I could not be happier for you, Mark, and Charlotte. We're so excited to meet our second grandchild, wrote Hillary Clinton. Bill added, Christmas comes early, and we're thrilled for Chelsea, Mark, and Charlotte's growing family in 2016. In a September interview on NBC's Today, Chelsea Clinton said her mom was always game for singing the wheels on the bus to granddaughter Charlotte and was helping her to learn to walk. The younger Clinton is author of the book, It's Your World, Get Informed, Get Inspired, and Get Going, an illustrated guide for young people looking to get involved in political and social causes. Chelsea Clinton is married to hedge fund manager Mark Mezvinsky, the son of former U.S. Congressman Edward Mezvinsky and former U.S. Congresswoman Marjorie Margolis Mezvinsky. End of that article. And the last thing we're reading on this page, the obituary page, Nebraska actress dies at 81. New York AP. Angela McEwen, who became a professional actress in her 70s and drew acclaim for her role in Alexander Payne's Nebraska, has died. She was 81. A publicist from McEwen confirmed Tuesday that McEwen died Sunday from complications due to lung cancer. The Los Angeles-born McEwen set out early in her life to become an actor, but largely gave it up to raise a family and work as a criminal court Spanish interpreter. But after her gastroenterologist husband, Guillermo McEwen, died... But after her gastroenterologist husband, Guillermo McEwen, retired, McEwen took up acting lessons and landed roles in a handful of TV shows, including Parks and Recreation, New Girl, and HBO's Getting On. But it was her role as a small-town newspaper editor in 2013's Nebraska that captured the most attention. The New Yorker called her scene the loveliest, most poignant scene in the film. McEwen is survived by two sons and two grandchildren. McEwen is survived by two sons and three grandchildren. End of the obituaries page. Earlier in Section D on our e-edition for the Herald Review for December 23rd is the Lifestyles page. A former WAC credits military service for helping her achieve her goals. This is by Donette Beckett, who is a H&R staff writer. Decatur. As one out of 11 children, Marcel Thomas Parker knew if she wanted to leave Decatur, she was going to have to strike out on her own. The chances of me going to college on my parents' income was slim or none, she said. Parker had always dreamed of traveling. She wanted to know what and who was outside of Illinois. Walking past the posters in the nearby Army recruiting office only fueled her curiosity. So at 20 years old, Parker joined what would be the last of the Women Army Corps in 1978. No other women in her family had joined the military, but Parker knew the Army offered a perfect avenue to achieve her goals. But little did she know that she was paving the way for future generations of her family, including three nieces and her own son, all of whom found success in military service. With a big family like this, the military was education, traveling, and money for our lives, Parker said. One of her nieces she inspired, Shalonda Tyrus, remembered when Parker would return to Decatur during her military leaves. She would tell about her travels and different situations she was in and the people she met, Tyrus said, and the satisfaction she had in serving the military. Although Tyrus was young, she knew that her aunt was doing what her aunt was doing was important. With her being an African-American female, it showed we could be doing something different than school, Tyus explained. Parker's experience would be a learning process. She found that many of the women who enlisted were just as frightened as she was. Instead of scared women, we ended up sisters and friends, Parker said. We had to look out for each other. Basic training began in McClellan, Anniston, Alabama, in February 1978. The women were trained together, but Parker said they were not treated differently than their male counterparts. We ran just like the men did, crawled in mud and dirt, Parker said. They didn't do anything special for us. After basic training, Parker was transferred to Fort Rucker in Dale County, Alabama. The young soldier found one noticeable difference in the regular Army post. There were approximately 40 women and 400 men. Parker thought the ratio was nice, but scary, too. You had dates almost every day of the week if you wanted to, she said. Good thing I was a good girl. The Army promised Parker a chance to travel. Everybody who joins the service thinks they're going to go to Hawaii or someplace you want to go, she said. The first place they send you is Germany. Parker stayed in the country for 3 years. She's also lived in other parts of the world, including Arizona, Panama, and Washington, D.C., the place she would settle in after leaving the service. Parker has since returned to Decatur with her husband and two of her three children. She hears of some of the same struggles she endured as a youth almost 40 years ago. Some girls don't have the advantages to learn, go to school, and meet new people and help the family back home, she said. They are just wasting their lives. For Tyus, military service made her more mature and helped her develop as an individual. It had benefited me in civilian life as well, Tyus said. It helped me get a jump above the rest. Tyus is now a registered nurse, an accomplishment she credits to the military through the GI Bill she received after she was discharged in 2000. According to Parker, the military provides shelter and food as well as education. So many end up with children and on the system, she said. I want them to see something other than finding a guy, having a family. Parker hopes other girls will see her example of military service and explore it as another choice. It's the best thing you can imagine, she said. The opportunities are endless. Under the category state and regional, class bands together for assignment. This is by Dave Fope, Lee News Service writer. Charleston. Bryn Logston's mom works at a nursing home, and she's been there to see and visit with people who live at the home. When she had to come up with an answer to the question of what breaks her heart, Brian thought of how the home's residents might be reaching their last years or could be fighting cancer or other illnesses. What came next was the idea to find something to brighten the residents' days by giving them cards and gifts, singing Christmas carols, or just spending time with them. They really enjoy having young people there, said Bryn, a sixth grader at Charleston's Jefferson Elementary School. They don't have many visitors. Her project at Hilltop Convalescent Center in Charleston was one of 18 her classes organized. It all started with a writing assignment in which the students had to tell about something that broke their hearts, with the paper also having to persuade readers to do something about it. Teacher Yvonne Larson explained that after she assigned the writing lesson to the students, it seemed natural to have them work together to try to have their causes come to fruition. I thought, what would happen if we get the whole class caring about this, Larson said. Sixth grader Blake Smith is an animal lover, and he not only took it on his own pet-related project, he helped a classmate with his as well. He said he and a friend spent part of 2 days outside the Charleston Rural King Supply Store to get donations of money and food for the Coles County Animal Shelter. For his project, Blake is raising donations for an organization called Hospice Hearts, which finds new homes for pets whose owners' health means they can't keep them anymore. We're saving stress, Blake said of the project. We're saving animals. Larson said she got the idea for the project after hearing Charleston School District Assistant Superintendent Tom Bilardo do a presentation on authentic assignments. She said the idea is to have the students work on something that will engage them and not just produce something for their teachers to review and return. Authentic assignments. One student wrote about an Australian bird that's facing extinction. Then you've got the kids right here with problems on the playground, she said. Larson said she hopes the community work will continue as long as it can go, and noted that Bryn wants to keep working at Hilltop past the holidays and have a regular group of students visit residents there. The picture of one of the students, Jefferson Elementary School, Grady Smithley, works with resident Joyce Stratton And looks like they're putting together a project with a candy cane and glue and glitter and everything at the Hilltop Convalescent Center in Charleston. In Home and Garden, Houseworks has been a pleasure for 28 years. This is by Steve Batty for the Beatty for the Herald and Review. I always hope one day I'd be writing my 1,000th Houseworks. It's not to be, but I got close. This is edition 882, 882, and it's the last. After a lifetime in the newspaper business, published my first paper at age 8 and was a professional printer at 16, and 28 years at the helm of Houseworks, I'm calling it quits. Scrubbing clean my ink-stained fingers, never again to work an election night or plow through unplowed snow at 1 a.m. Wars, assassinations, natural disasters, and stupid people tricks of the day will come as a surprise to me when I open the newspaper off my will come as a surprise to me when I bring the paper in off my front porch and settle down with my morning coffee. Unless, of course, I take to watching television news in my dotage shutter. That's his shutter, not mine. My gang of loyal readers should know I may be hanging up my keyboard, but not my shovels and trowels, my hammer and tool belt, or my beloved chisels. I'll need something to keep me out of trouble during retirement. I do want to give a special shout out to the folks in Glens Falls, New York. The Post Star was one of the first newspapers to pick up Houseworks when it went national in 2003, and I have continued to field more questions from its readers than any but those in my hometown in Lincoln, Nebraska. There must be a lot of hammer wielders in Glens Falls. One last thing. It's been my habit here at Houseworks Central to start the year off by looking back at the comments of readers who have taken me to task for whatever I wrote during the previous few months. I'll call it follow-up files. Of course, there won't be such a column next week, but I really wanted to run this item, sort of a follow-up falls farewell. E-concerns. A column I wrote in October suggested several things a would-be buyer might not have thought about in searching for a home. Things like which way the driveway is oriented, south if you want to cut down on your snow shoveling, mature plantings or you'll wait 20 years for shade, room flow, unless you don't mind that the route to the toilet is past your bed. But I confess, I never considered what concerned loyal reader Andy, internet availability and cell phone coverage. Many people, Andy wrote, don't even give these things a second thought, much less a first thought. But with more and more today's younger crowd telecommuting, working from home, or simply dependent on Netflix, etc., for watching TV, it's a must. I'm an older member of this crowd at 37, but it's a definite consideration. When my wife and I purchased our house about 2.5 years ago, both those items were high on my list. Electric access has never been a priority for me, and until very recently, I never owned a computer, and I still don't have a cell phone. The machinery the newspaper maintained for me always seemed to work just fine, and I've never needed to talk to anyone so badly that I was willing to wear a telephone. And the truth is, I thought the whole issue had vanished by now. But for those living in geographically remote areas, but apparently not, so it's something you might want to keep in mind when you're house shopping. P.S. The address and email below will be good for a few more weeks. If you have a question or comment, get it in soon, gang. I don't have that on my page. Probably reachable at the Herald and Review, which prints his housework for Steve Batty. End of that article. Transitioning over to the Decatur Tribune online, we have Paul Osborne's City Beat, Christmas memory from the City Council Chamber. He says, it was the last city council meeting of the year several years ago when I served as mayor. The previous several weeks, I'd had a strong disagreement with another councilman that spilled over it a little into that meeting. After the council meeting was over, I approached him and started talking about our differences, wanting to make my position clear. We continued to talk, and as time passed, both of us were able to understand more of the other person's position. The conversation became enjoyable and mellow. When we finished talking, we looked around, and nearly everybody had cleared out of the council chamber, and a member of staff was ready to shut off the lights. As I headed to the mayor's office down the hall, and the councilman headed for the chamber door to leave, I wished him a Merry Christmas. He turned, smiled, and said, "You have a Merry Christmas, too." I don't know if both of us had caught an extra measure of the Christmas spirit, but I finally remember that Talking things out with him one-on-one was refreshing, and I was really in the Christmas mood when I left the Civic Center that night. That happened a decade ago, but I rarely pass the Civic Center during Christmas season that I don't think of that conversation. All of us need to constantly be reminded that differences can often be resolved if we take time to talk to each other in a one-on-one private conversation, especially at Christmas time. End of his edit. That piece. Name removed. The Macon County Electoral Board voted Thursday to remove the name of Brian E. Hott from the March 15th general primary ballot. Hott was a Democratic candidate for circuit clerk and would have run against Republican incumbent Lois Durbin in the general election since he had no opponent in the primary. With Hott's name being removed, there isn't any primary election opponent for any of the incumbents in the major county offices that are up for election. After the board's review, Hott was found to have less than the 148 signatures required for his name to remain on the ballot. Next section. Signatures. I'm sure it was disappointing for Brian E. Hott to have his name removed from the primary election ballot because he didn't have enough valid signatures on his petition. This seems to be happening more and more, and I'm not sure exactly why. Usually the number of valid signatures, this time it was 148, required to get on the ballot is fairly low for an area the size of Macon County. It hasn't been that long that some city council candidates were knocked off the ballot because they didn't have enough valid signatures and were challenged by the Change Decatur organization. High priority. One of the first considerations in getting into a political race should be what it takes to get on the ballot. If you can't get your name on the ballot, you've already lost. One of the easiest ways to beat a potential opponent in a race is to see if he or she has enough valid signatures or complied with other petition rules, such as in the case of the challenge to the council members, how the petitions were bound together. In Brian E. Hott's case, staunch Republicans James Gresham and Jerry Stocks filed an objection to Hott's nomination papers. Hearings were held by the Macon County Electoral Board, which found that Hott did not have enough signatures. When I circulated petitions the two times I ran successfully for mayor, I made sure I had a lot of extra signatures just in case some of them were not valid, such as a person who signed that didn't live in the city. If you're planning to plan on running for office, my advice is to make sure you get a lot more signatures on your petition than required. That way, if your petitions are challenged and some of the signatures are found to be invalid for whatever reason, you still have plenty to meet the legal requirement. Beware. The Decatur Police Department has issued a warning that during the holiday season, there is often an increase of wallet and purse thefts. Oftentimes, the thieves will immediately use stolen credit cards for purchases at nearby stores before the credit cards are canceled or reported stolen. A woman recently reported that her purse was stolen in Decatur dining establishment while she ate. Her purse was hanging on the back of her chair. Similar thefts have recently occurred throughout Illinois and in the St. Louis and Chicago areas. The Decatur Police Department is asking citizens to be especially attentive to placement of purses and wallets during the holiday season and to report to suspicious activities. Okay, here's a Grinch. The people speak. Police department needs your help to find Grinch who stole Christmas gifts for area's needy children. The Decatur Police Department needs your help in solving this week's crime of the week. On November 11th, sometime between 9:30 p.m. and midnight, a burglary occurred at 888 West El Dorado Street in Decatur. The building that was burglarized was being used by the New Vision Church of God to provide gifts on Christmas to needy children in the area. The suspect stole a number of items, including costume jewelry, stuffed animals, and heat lamps used for cooking. The Decatur Police Department needs your help in solving this crime. If you have any information regarding this crime, please call Crime Stoppers at 423-TIPS. You do not have to give your name. Crime Stoppers will pay $500 or more for information that leads to the rest of the crime of the week. End of that. News from here and there. City Council approves property tax increase hotel redevelopment agreement. The Decatur City Council on Monday reluctantly voted to approve an increase in the city's portion of the local property tax, capping a 2016 budgeting season driven largely by what was a projected $4.3 million deficit and declining local revenues. Members voted 6-1 in favor of a tax levy of $1.725 million over last year, an amount that will add an estimated $52 to the tax bill of an owner of a $100,000 home. The levy represents a 14.6% increase over the tax year 2014 payable in 2015 and is one of three revenue enhancements approved to fill the projected deficit and help fund current basic services, including public safety protection, community and public works services. The increases will also help the city begin the critical step of rebuilding cash reserves. Next year's city budget also will be funded in part by an increase in the utility tax from 1.25% to 4.25%, which is expected to generate $3.7 million in new revenue. An increase in the hotel use tax from 6% to 8% goes in effect January 1, 2016. In other business, council members approved a redevelopment agreement with Pace Hospitality, LLC, to build a new Holiday Inn and Suites and associated Burger Theory full-service gourmet restaurant. The project will involve the construction of a four-story, 114-room hotel on what is currently a 3.55-acre unimproved site within the northern city limits of Decatur. The project investment is more than $9 million with construction to provide 65 local construction jobs and begin in the first quarter of 2016. The construction period is expected to take 9 to 15 months, and the hotel is expected to support 50 full-time equivalent employees once it opens. The redevelopment agreement includes sharing 50% of the current 6% hotel use tax received by the city from the project for 5 years. Crime Stoppers information names suspects in Flora Gems robbery in October. On 10/31/15, officers responded to the report of a robbery at Flora Gems located at 101 North Water. Subjects had entered the store and used hammers to break display cases and remove property. The case originally investigated by the patrol division with witnesses being located. The case was then assigned to the detective division to follow up on investigations. Crime Stopper information received naming suspects in the crime. These subjects were located and interviewed. On 12/20, patrol officers were investigating an unrelated matter when a person with information related to the Flora Gems case was identified. The patrol officer recognized that this was information relevant to the investigation and notified the Investigations Bureau. The suspects, a 19-year-old male Decatur resident and a 16-year-old Decatur male, were then interviewed and each admitted their role in the Flora Gems robbery. The case is being investigated. Then American Red Cross volunteers respond to area home. That's the 19th. Let's see here. End of this. Finishing part two of Wednesday, December 23rd, Decatur. We got Mac on sports. St. Teresa interviews 6 for head football coach. Dr. Ken Hendrickson, St. Teresa chief executive officer and principal, said Tuesday at the Team Soy St. Teresa Christmas Tournament that he and his committee have completed the first round of interviews with 6 of the 23 candidates for head football coach. Hendrickson said the quality of applicants exceeded his expectations and illustrates the respect coaches have for the Bulldogs' winning football tradition. He said several of the candidates would be brought back for interviews and that they will be conducting their own background checks for the candidates interviewed to date. After taking several days off for Christmas, Hendrickson thought he may be able to announce the Bulldogs' new head coach by the first of the year. St. Teresa reopens Monday, January 4th, after the Christmas break. I will have more on this developing story in a future print edition of the Decatur Tribune. So that's the end of December 23rd, Decatur Tribune and Herald Review. Signing off for today, this is Debbie. Talk to you again next week.